Thank you very much, honourable members. Let's start with our afternoon session. Like I said, I'm welcoming Savrala and Busa, who will be presenting their case this afternoon. You are heartily welcome. Like I was indicating to those who came before you, we are more interested in making sure that at the end of this process, as a public participation, we will have a law that can be able to serve the people of the Republic in a very better way, and make sure that we are safe as we travel the roads in the Republic of South Africa. But what is more important, like they were indicating, those who came yesterday and today, it is about the economy, it is about social aspect issues, it's also about the environmental issues that we are looking at as we're dealing. The safety is the aspect of ARTO, but we should also take cognizance of the fact that committing from one point to the other, we're dealing with a number of things which actually will be able to make sure that as a people we better the lives of the people of the Republic, and we also make sure that we, the economy, the social issues and every other thing is taken forward because of the likes of yourself. We're going to be starting with Busa. You will introduce yourself and introduce your entourage. We give every presenter or organization 20 minutes for them to present as a collective, and then we will have another 30, 40 minutes of interaction amongst ourselves, which actually believe that once we do that, we are able to really get an understanding of where we are. Honourable members, the presentation will be flighted on the screens whilst the functionaries. Okay. In our packs we have this, but it's been modified in the bigger pack that we have. But it's been modified. As soon as the modified copy comes, it will be given to yourself. Thank you very much, leader of the delegation, if you can start.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good afternoon, honourable ladies and gentlemen. Your honourable Chair, I am a delegation of one. There's colleagues here will present after me. My name is Mark Corcoran. I represent Busa on behalf of the Trade and Transport Subcommittee. I am not a legal expert. So I know the House is well represented with the appropriate legal authorities, so I'll certainly do my best to address any particular queries or concerns that they may have in relation to the points that have been raised, but obviously it has been a document prepared with input from our constituents. Perhaps just some opening remarks, I noted the comments that had been made earlier on with our previous colleagues in the delegation. And at the outset, I think it's important, and Madam Chair, you've addressed it in opening, is that we must not lose the context of R2 in the context of road safety. That is our primary focus, and we need, and we are challenged to find the right key to unlock the door for road safety. As Busa, we appreciate the opportunity that we've been given to come to the Honourable House. We're not clear when we last presented to the generous House, so we appreciate the opportunity and hope that this will be the first of many other engagements and development of a partnership between ourselves as the private sector and yourselves. We've also hoped that it will cause the activation of our development of a further relationship with the Department of Transport itself. We had the honour of meeting the Minister and her senior team at the beginning of last year, but unfortunately the momentum out of that task team that we had intended to set up has unfortunately been reduced, but we hope that we, with a renewed vigour and focus, that this opportunity will give us, that we can work coherently and effectively as key partners and stakeholders on general transport, but in particular road safety. The other point in terms of opening would be to say that the notification of the changes and the manner in which the amendment bill had been presented is of a concern to our constituents. And I've noted that I think that it's an area, an opportunity for improvement. And my suggestion would be is that, you know, if there is some way that on a more operational, technical basis that we can have a more fulfilling and fuller way of engaging with each other, because this particular amendment bill came to us at quite short notice from a third party, and we were under quite a lot of pressure to prepare a response. And I think there's an opportunity to improve consultation, and I think particularly the previous delegation had emphasized the need, and I think it goes to these days, the importance of not just having a tick box exercise, it's the importance of having meaningful and sustained consultations on key matters. And I think we need to work together on that to understand what that means and manage our expectations. A further point that had been highlighted, which I thought may be useful to address to the House, the Honourable House, is that obviously technology is there and there is a number of not alone smaller organizations, but even within the business fraternity, the costs in both the actual costs and time can be quite burdensome. And perhaps it's something that the House may want to consider, where submissions may be permitted via video conference. A lot of the delegates, if I looked at the draft agenda, would have traveled down from Johannesburg, so maybe there's an opportunity for a sitting elsewhere. So I think we all are under pressure to ensure that we operate without any fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and that counts for both rands and time as well. And I'm sure that's just some opening remarks, and I appreciate for the indulgence. To the substance of the matter, I would like to just outline to you a little bit of introduction to BUSA in this particular forum. I would then like to just position this R2, the amendment bill, in the broader context of road safety, with some of the insights that we have been and some of the dealings we've had with some of the colleagues who were in the House already at NEDLAC, and then just some of the comments, just to articulate some of the comments that we already submitted, which have been circulated. BUSA, as you may be aware, is a confederation of business organizations. It represents South African business on macroeconomic and high-level issues that affect it at both national and international levels. And our objective is to play a constructive role in the country's economic growth, development, and transformation. Ultimately, to ensure that the country in all sectors can thrive, expand, and be competitive. The BUSA represents the views of members in a number of national structures, bodies, both statutory and non-statutory. And as I indicated, BUSA sits within NEDLAC, where some of these matters have been previously discussed. As a context, again, a reminder, the promulgation, the Act was promulgated R2 in 1998. There were a number of further regulations, and that led, obviously, as you'll be aware, to the pilot project that had been run in Tshwane and Johannesburg. In 2014 and 15, there was a NEDLAC engagement with a task team, and a copy of the pilot report, after some deliberation, had finally been circulated. And that report was insightful in that at that point in time, it had highlighted several concerns of R2 based on that pilot project. As we're aware, it still is in terms of a pilot project at the moment. It's important that those insights and reports have been recognized, and we'll talk a little bit further. Our concern is that a lot of the feedback has not necessarily been articulated in subsequent amendments. The further work had been done by the RTMC. There was a various studies and some research, particularly in 2014, and it would again appear to us that the thrust of the communication in that document has not found its way into some of the amendments. We also would say that without the issue, although RT has been implemented, that is without the demerit points, the Nedlac constituencies had raised concern about the impact on jobs, and obviously you've outlined in your introduction the importance of every job is important in the country, and we're concerned that whether the unintended consequences of some of the clauses in the current amendment may have the unintended consequence of making some people unemployable through no fault of their own, in that their driver's license will be withdrawn given the demerit points, if that was to be implemented, given some of the impact of the amendments. The other concern that had been raised at a Nedlac level was the seeming prioritization around the generation and collection of revenue, that I noted that the previous delegation had also made that reference. Apologies for the, I've just noticed that there's a spelling error that will amend that in the final version. And in the most recent, last year in October at Nedlac, where we had an engagement, one of the concerns that had been raised was feedback with regards to the follow-up to that pilot report, and we were advised by colleagues at government that there is currently a study evaluating the efficacy of R2 in being undertaken, and the note was made that we look forward to that report being circulated to the constituents. It would be useful if the House is aware of if that study, if that report is now available or if it will be available. And I think one of the kernel questions that had been raised at Nedlac was to question whether R2 will change driver behaviour. We've seen the pilot take place in Tshwane and Johannesburg, and we would question whether there is any empirical evidence to suggest that without the demerit points being in place, whether there has been any change in behaviour. And the hypothesis to be tested is that if demerit points were to be implemented, would that create any change in driver behaviour? And I think the parties at Nedlac were concerned that that hypothesis has not been adequately tested. If we move to just the context in which we find ourselves, the 2010 and the decade, the UN decade of road safety, there was a commitment by the South African government to reduce by 50% in line with many other countries, which we're a signatory to, as we're aware. The quite bold strategic intent to reduce our road fatalities by 2020 by 50%. Now, there was both preceding that signatory and subsequent, there has been certainly, as most members of the House will be aware, no shortage of strategic documents and strategic plans to navigate our way to achieving that 50% reduction. And unfortunately, regrettably, we must all hold ourselves account that as a collective, we have not been able to achieve. Notwithstanding that it is of a concern, and this was one of the elements that we had engaged with our government colleagues and social partners at Nedlac, with the National Road Safety Strategy that had then been presented at Nedlac, outlining the view that 50% target will now move from 2020 to 2030. And I think the concern, that had been raised by the social partners that was why, although it aligns with the National Development Plan, why are we now shifting the focus to 2030? And if we look at the new strategy, our view as BUSA, which we had given in our submission to government at Nedlac, was that the strategy document, whilst a very helpful and useful summary document of all of the previous strategies and action plans, that it didn't offer anything new and any particular insight as to how we were going to fundamentally change our approach to be able to achieve that 50% target. In that, we also, our colleagues at government at Nedlac had responded that there is currently a review at the UN when setting sustainable development goals to extend to 2030, but as I'll show you in a minute, there's examples where, even as an example, the European bloc have reduced their fatalities by a significant proportion over the first 4 or 5 years of the decade in question. And I think we need to reflect as to whether we could not be doing more, and that by pushing out to 2030, we are not, in fact, missing an opportunity for the real level of intensity and focus. This is an additional slide from the presentation, and again, it outlines some of the roadmap that will get us between 14,000 being the average current fatality rate in 2010 reported to 50% being under 7,000. And whilst there is a number of principles that have been outlined and a description of that, our concern would certainly be that in areas of impactful use of technology, we would propose that within the next 5 years, the technology of vehicles as one will certainly add an awful lot more safety features, that autonomous driving will eventually start taking its proportional representation within fleets and obviously within the newer fleets, and that the targets that had been identified for the reduction didn't fully, in our opinion, assess and account for the technology advances that will take place. So one of our challenges we have with the current strategy is that it's very much based on what we know now, what we've experienced in the past, and not necessarily placing enough emphasis on the challenges that will face us going forward, and particularly in the legislative environment, where in all of the plans there is little outline of where the regulations required for connected vehicles, how will we deal with autonomous vehicles, what will be the timeline dealing with managing a whole new sharing economy, which will and should have an impact on road safety, but there is little sense of what the impact of that opportunity will be. The next slide talks to, excuse me, a little bit more unpacking, and I hope our colleagues in the House can see this. There is a lot of focus, as you will see, in terms of short-term and medium-term, which is up to 2020. There's a lot of detail, but it is noticeable that for the final decade, there is a number, it is a little bit sparse in terms of focus, and that's appreciable, but I think that is where we need to understand a little bit better whether R2 will play a greater role by then, or whether there's other mechanisms and other processes that need to be applied. In the RTMC's report of 2014, it is important to, on their own account of statistics, that under Pillar 3, being safer vehicles, 74% of factors contributing, factors resulting in crashes can be attributed to tire bursts. A further 6% can be attributed to smooth tires. So under Pillar 3, there is data available from the RTMC in 2014 that would suggest that 80% of fatalities, of factors resulting in crashes, can be attributed to tires. Now, R2 doesn't cater for tires. The inspection of tires is an important element if based on the facts. So the question would be, if that is a factor, then what are the mechanisms, other than what we would say visible policing, road inspections, to check tires if they contribute 80% towards crashes? Similarly, under Pillar 4, safer road users, 43% of the fatalities can be attributable to pedestrians and jaywalking. 16% is attributable to speed. So R2, in its most part, sets a focus on speed. But we certainly would like to be aware of where is there a similar and equal focus that has been placed on R2 with regards to how do we communicate and educate the pedestrians on the road and engineer our roads and put pedestrian bridges at those accessible points. There is a concern, and perhaps it's due to our lack of active engagements with the respective role custodians of the information, but certainly as partners in this journey, we would certainly like to understand where are those hotspots, where are the priorities, and focus on those key areas from the data so that we can collectively look to impact on road safety in those areas. I've made the reference to smart vehicles. eCall is a technology within Europe that is now being stipulated as mandatory in 2018. For those in the House who may not be aware, eCall is a technology which is effectively a embedded SIM card in a vehicle. The European Union has made it compulsory that from 2018, vehicles will be equipped with eCall. What that will mean is that if there is an accident, the vehicle will make a call to an emergency service provider that has been linked to that. And that ensures that in terms of that golden hour, in terms of post-crash, that there can be, it'll one, give you the geolocation of that vehicle, and is able to, if the person is conscious, the responding emergency service can then communicate with the vehicle and the people if they're available. These are the technologies that need to be considered, but are currently not on our radar for that we're aware of for consideration. We would equally say that if we look at road safety, and this is coming again from the presentation document on the National Road Safety Strategy, there are a number of areas regarding the prioritization matrix, and which are those ideas, where are those, which are those initiatives that are quick wins, which ones would give us the results. And our concern that we had submitted to our honourable colleagues at NEDLAC was that we would like to have been part of the, to understand better the process to prioritise some of these initiatives, as we would feel that there's probably a lot of other initiatives that may be positioned that would have, could be implemented easily and that may have a lot more impact in achieving the ultimate goal of road safety. A concern also, and again I preface it by saying that we may not have adequate engagement structures in place, and I think that would be certainly one of the key takeaways from this opportunity to present to the honourable gentlemen and ladies in this House, is to say that we find that amongst our members and ourselves, that when we do submit on the various amendments, we don't get any feedback, and when we see the revised legislation, there is no apparent, there is no consideration of those views reflected in the updated documents. So I think there is, we would call it a submission fatigue, starting to creep in, that there's a sense that we would, although we with best intentions want to engage and be a key stakeholder and participate, we feel that the views are not adequately reflected. And there's perhaps, as we've spoken to some of the, our colleagues in government, we need to formalize a bit better the engagements in however they manifest themselves, to rather be part of the development and drafting process than be left in a situation where we have to respond under short periods. And unfortunately, we find that a lot of these amendments out for comment tend to be published in December during the public holidays, which obviously create challenges for us in terms of responding adequately. So I think, again, it goes to the point about meaningful participation and consultation as a key stakeholder, because we, it's important for business. One life lost on the roads is a tragedy and cannot be accepted. It is certainly a national disgrace that we are losing so many without any impact over such a long period of time, and so many strategies having been presented to various houses. I made a reference earlier on in terms of to the decade of action and what some other countries have contributed. This just is a reflection of what happens at the Europe. There's a European safety report in 2015. Their trajectory as of 2014 had indicated a decrease of about just under 10%. Now the point is that that is 25,000, nearly 26,000 people out of a population of 740 million. We account for half of the number of fatalities, but yet with a population of 50,000. So that there, and I appreciate that within the National Road Safety Strategy, there are observations about how we can learn from other countries and change the behavior. But as an anecdote, I'm always amazed at when the smoking legislation was introduced, there was no smoking police, there was no demerit points equivalent put on society. The message had been given, the benefits of it, society accepted it. And I think our challenge is to figure out how do we replicate what has become the norm so quickly. And apologies to all our smokers in the House who may have to feel that they have been ostracized and sent outside into cold blizzards. But there is something in there that we, as part, as society and partners in this challenge, need to understand of how do we get people to under, how do we change people's behavior in a similar fashion that was so easily understood and adopted, despite our various challenges. To the comments, honourable members, with the pack that you have received, this is really just to go through, and I'll be relatively brief because you have already had the opportunity to see it previously. We are concerned about the shift towards the service and the fact that the view is to use technology, which we would not dispute, but we're concerned that it is a stretch too far without the necessary management structures and integrity of process when it comes to social media. So if somebody, for example, was to be served via Facebook a traffic infringement, there would be concerns about that, and in terms of the definition of electronic service, there isn't sufficient safeguard or understanding of what we mean by electronic service in this particular context. And certainly our view is that we would rather focus on personal and registered service. The other aspect about R2, and we have raised it at both NEDLAC and in previous submissions, there is a concern that the R2 process is focused on an automated process to generate infringements, as opposed to changing behavior. And one of the key facets of changing behavior is that engagement between a traffic enforcement officer and a member of the public when an infringement has taken place. Our view is that from observations and research in other countries, the importance of an enforcement officer calling the infringer to point at a point of infringement cannot be lost versus when they receive an infringement notice sometime later in the post or however, when the infringement has already taken place, and the opportunity to educate the infringer has been lost. So the whole process at the beginning, as we understand it in terms of the design of R2 in its beginnings from the Perrin system, which came from Australia, was the need to ensure that via visible policing that road users are made aware through contact, face-to-face contact between the traffic authorities and the road user as part of a key element of changing road traffic behavior. Infringements, there is a concern in terms of the definition of infringements, and particularly, and I'll speak about it a little bit later in short, about the infringement and their status to be decriminalized and put into administrative process. We believe that there are some constitutional concerns of that. We also need to understand where the sheriff, as part of the enforcement process, has been eliminated, and it would be useful to understand why that was not part now of the new process. In terms of the administration of habitual offenders, whilst we appreciate the intention, we are very concerned as to the unintended consequences that this would place, particularly onto fleet owners, and I'm sure our colleagues from Servrala will amplify this a bit further, and I heard our previous delegation speak to it. The large fleet owners rely on proxies. Those individuals, through no fault of their own, may well end up being habitual offenders depending on the administrative process. There is concerns regarding the process of how these entities would be structured, funded, and also what will be the criteria for success. So we certainly, whilst there is an appreciation for the intention, we believe that there hasn't been adequate consultation and thought through the impact, and we feel that this is an opportunity for further discussion. We're also concerned about the repeal of Section 12 of the Act, and equally the business and email address of infringers in relation to the electronic service are concerns that we've addressed earlier on. We've also expressed concern about the representation after 40 days, we would believe that there are some constitutional issues that the House needs to be concerned about. The demerit points, I've alluded to it previously, and these would be the responsibility in terms of the central database having an accurate status if they were to, in terms of where the demerit points were implemented. There is a reliance to ensure that their correct data is timelessly managed, available, if there is going to be a sanction against the road user, that we've got confidence that the right timeliest data is available. Also in terms of the Section 25 of the Principal Act, there is concern that this also, that it has been changed, and we're unsure as to what the thought process was that led to this amendment, and we certainly would like to understand a little bit further why this was done. In conclusion, Madam Chair, we remain concerned, as we have expressed in various other submissions concerned about the efficacy and effectiveness of ARTU in its current administrative process, and whether in fact it will have the intended outcome of changing road driver behavior and reduce current accident rates versus the perception or otherwise that the system is being oiled so as to generate as efficiently as possible traffic infringements with a view to raising revenue. The concerns, we would also raise a concern regarding the tribunal and whether we have not been aware of the motivation for the need for the tribunal as part of the process. And we certainly would look forward to engaging to understand what the motivation was, whether there was a gap analysis that clearly identified the need for the tribunal and to what extent the tribunal will offer savings, whether in time, efficiency, in the implementation of ARTU. This was a surprise in terms of the ARTU amendment bill, and I think that it needs further discussion. Data remains key, and we raise it in our submissions in relation to the National Road Safety Strategy. And the point there was that we remain concerned that there is not adequate collection of crash data, that we need to be informed from a data perspective as to if we work on the basis of the data already presented by 2014 by the RTMC, that would suggest that the two focus areas for the reduction of road fatalities would be on tires and managing pedestrians. ARTU doesn't speak to that. It focuses singularly on speed. There are a number of elements in terms of criminal law and prosecution authorities which needs to be clarified. And also the key point is at the end of the day that if there is an infringement, which is a criminal, is in Schedule 5, has a charge code, an individual ultimately remains having the constitutional right to defend themselves in the court of law. And turning a transaction, an offence into a mere transaction, a financial transaction, is not acceptable nor correct. Given the concerns expressed above, we believe that there is a lot more work that needs to be done and needs to before this House can adopt the bill. As BUSA, we certainly, as again say, appreciate the opportunity to present. We are aware and we look forward to participating in the necessary work streams where possible to ensure that we can continue to make a positive contribution to the reduction in the levels of road user fatalities and be a key agent and partner of both government and society to change the behaviour of South African road users. I thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, there we are, the presentation, so detailed, but within the space of time as requested. I see your hand, Honourable Ramatlakana. I see your hand, Honourable Humsinga. Honourable De Freitas will be the third. Honourable Ramatlakana.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation, BUSA presentation. Just a few questions, just for me to understand the difficulties that BUSA has with certain provisions. You mentioned that you have a difficulty in the email serving notices by infringement by email, that kind of social media. But you don't, or in fact, let me say electronic serving, you have some challenges about that. But you don't offer alternative. I think the argument about why the issue about additional method of serving by way of emails and so on was explained in the past as well, but you don't offer an alternative. Why would you have a problem when in court the procedure of serving the other side in terms of using the electronic serve method is accepted? Why would it not be accepted if it's done under ARTU? That's the first question I want to ask. The second one is you have a problem with the sheriff and the delusion of the sheriffs. You want to remain with the status quo. I just want to find out why you have that kind of a... Is it a problem of understanding the rationale behind the deletion of the sheriffs in terms of warrant and attachment of goods in lieu of fines and so on? Is that kind of problem that you are having? Thirdly, you have a problem with the 40 days representation. You raise a problem that you don't have. You have a problem that you can reissue. I just want to find out why you have a problem with the whole thing about reissuing. You say that once is withdrawn, that should stand. What is authority of this argument? What do you use authority that you can't correct the incorrect serving in terms of representation? Why would you say, oh, once it's withdrawn, it should stand? What authority are you relying on in that statement that you're making? And I think it's on the, you say withdrawal must stand, and the withdrawal must stand, but you don't say, on that paragraph, you do speak about the Constitution. You say that RTA need to take the heed of this in terms of the rights of citizen under the Constitution. Now, you didn't cite what exactly is you're referring to when you say in terms of the Constitution. What are you referring to? Is it your view that when you're doing the representation and there's a whole thing about reissuing, it's infringement? Is that a part of injuring the Constitution if that is resubmitted? And if you say so, which provision are you using that gives that particular authority that you are hinging on? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and before I start, my apologies for being late for the second session to everybody, through you, Chair. I've been covered to a large extent by my colleague, and I would like to know whether we could get hold of the slides, since some of the slides, in spite of your reference to modern technology, failed me in the fact that the text was so small I couldn't read it, and you have means in enlarging it and so on. Then your reference to tyres being excluded, as far as I understand, all current road infringements are covered within the framework of the intention of R2. It's just the method of penalizing which is different. So there's no intent to exclude certain offenses or infringements or give higher priority or so. You understand it wrong. And if I'm understanding it wrong, please tell me how you see it differently. As I said, I see the whole current framework of traffic offences being part of where we're going forward to. It's just the method, and if you like, the scare tactics, which is different in an attempt then to try and change mentality through that behaviour. The sheriff role has been covered by my colleague. But I would like to just have your comments on seeing that you had a very technical, statistical, number-based, data-based approach. How would you imagine that normal sheriffs would be able to handle the enormous volumes that we are talking of? I do agree with a couple of things which I think is just important from the National Transport Committee to you representing BUSA to just confirm. We are well aware of the fact that our crash data is in a bad state, and we do from the committee side acknowledge improvements that we've been seeing lately and presentations that is encouraging in terms of the direction that we're going with the data which we are busy building up. And I agree with you that although there's a lot of documentation and strategic intent and ideas around how we should go about with road safety, that implementation is the big problem. So we are very serious from our side in being part of the thinking process around bridging that, given that certain elements and aspects are improving, around how we cross that bridge in getting the implementation side sorted out. Just important for you to know that it's our concern as well. Certainly there is a concern in policy making in general to incorporate and include more people and a bigger spectrum and scope of contributors and stakeholders into the design part as just into the comment part. That's the reason why you are part of this process this morning, sir. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I'd just like to ask that we get a copy of that. There's some interesting information on there. I've been covered by my previous colleague, my colleagues have just spoken. Now, just one question. I was very interested to hear about a report on the pilot project on ARTO. Chair, that's news to me, and we haven't received such a report. So if we could ask whoever's the concerned party, the receiver of this report on ARTO, because I actually asked a similar question a while back. So I'd be interested to get that as soon as we can. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you for the presentation. I think that was one of our concerns because we wanted to involve everybody. Chairperson, but nevertheless, I will ask some clarities there and there. In your own input, most you were referring to the European Union, of which there's nothing wrong, but I wanted to get from you, whether do you have any experience around in Africa, because as we're sharing the borders, for example, most of our drivers which are here are drivers from SADC. Can be Lesotho, Swaziland, Mozambique, Botswana, Zimbabwe, etc., etc. Do you have any experience so that we can link all the experience? And then again, Chairperson, I was touched somewhere from their own input in terms of interaction with other people or with the stakeholders. Somewhere, when in your background, you said ARTO was started 1998, and then the Act saw no further development to close to 10 years. And then also you said 2014, 2015, whereby the NEDLAC task team which was established. And then you spoke about the Fair Amendments Act, whatever. So the thing which I wanted to bring to your attention, Chairperson, I wanted to find out from him, as this exercise is of us interacting with you, are you satisfied that you are taking you on board? Because it seems to me that they were not satisfied that some of the stakeholders were not taken on board. But by this exercise, are you satisfied? That's what I wanted to find out. Because when you refer to some of the years, you indicated strongly that maybe people were not consulted enough. Because I believe ourselves, were like what we're doing now, it's part of consultation. And Chairperson also, I think in order, when why I'm raising that, I wanted to qualify the issue of radical transformation. If we are concerned, if we are really, really honest about transformation. Because this thing is long now put on table. People were given, it was reversed several times, as you indicated. And also, Chairperson, he, somewhere where he indicated about that the concerns about BUSA, about the efficiency and the effectiveness of ARTO. And you indicated that it is not entirely given the prescripts of Section 87 of the National Road Traffic Act. Is it correct? And then also, secondly, the infringement referred to ARTO Act as indeed due to the fact that this action or lack of, therefore, are deemed offenses in the National Traffic Act. So, Chairperson, what I wanted to find out from him, what can be the solution, therefore? Because my concern is one, you know, since we started by these public hearings, to me, what is concerning me the most is that I think part of our responsibility is to have an amicable solution about this bill or this, so that we can reduce some of the accidents in our roads. But opposite, some people, in particular consultants, all those groups which are linked to consultants, their concern is not about to get the solution, but is to maintain what they believe is that is their profit from the infringers, because they know very well that the infringers, they go to them. So from your side, as the business unity of South Africa, what is your take? Lastly, there was an issue which was raised by Honorable Member Ramatlakar about the that Busa does not agree with the intent of infringement within 40 days. What can be the solution in that regard? Because it means that you agree. The only difference, you don't agree with the 40 days. Is it the 40 days too much, or is it the 40 days less? Because to me, it doesn't mean that you reject totally that period of 40 days, but you are not agreeing with the 40 days. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. The current format that ARTO has been made, according to you, is ineffective and inefficient. How would you like to, maybe just one, two examples of the format that would make it to be efficient and effective? And the other matter that you raised was the driver behavior, which you believe is key and central. What are the things that you believe should be put into either regulations or in the Act, which will be able to assist us in dealing with the challenges that are there in terms of the driver behavior? And lastly, from me, the revenue collection and generation is one of the aspects which a lot of people since yesterday, as they come here, they talk to matters of revenue generation and revenue collection. What is it that we can be able to put in place instead of revenue generation, which will be able to give the impetus on the Act as is currently stated, the proposal that would be able to really give impetus to the Act as we are proposing, so that it's not seen as a revenue collection, but it is seen as something that is deterrent towards the driver behavior that is there as a challenge, and in essence also trying to deal with the issues of the unroadworthy vehicles that we see mostly in our roads. What are the things, the systems that you can be able to put in place, which will be able to assist us in dealing in that regard? I think I've covered. Let me give it to you so that you can be able to respond. Honorable Member? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is probably an occasion where I would like to have my delegation.
Welcome to respond as the entourage that you have brought with.
If this was another format, it might have the opportunity to dial a friend. At the beginning of the presentation, you may have noted two key points. One is that I have not the legal background and guru, and I'm regretting that I'm going to disappoint some of the House by not being able to address their questions directly. But it is by certainly no means that I'm not sure of the process of how this works, given that I'm a novice, so forgive me for the error. But I'm not sure if, in terms of those particular questions that are of the technical nature, if they can be forwarded, and then we can address them. But I will just make a note of them as we go through. But perhaps, Chair, you can give me some guidance. As I said, the other unfortunate point that we'd highlighted is that due to the shortness of notification and preparation and people's availability, we weren't able to get a broader skills base of knowledge to be able to fill. So I shall, with that as an introduction, try and work my way through the various queries that, and questions that have been raised. The first question, and I'm sure if you don't mind, I'll work in the order they were given, as opposed to starting with your honourable self first in reverse order. in the presentation, the preference from our view is that registered mail and in-person service is preferred. And I think it would be, whilst there is an acknowledgement of trying to use technology, I think where we may not meet is in terms of that there hasn't been adequate understanding of what do we mean by electronic service in terms of how would it practically work in terms of social media, if the incorrect mail address or who is the responsible person for if there was a typing error when somebody typed in someone's email address and instead of it going to whoever at one, it went to somebody at two. So the concern is, I think we would all agree that where we can, we must use technology. I think where we perhaps part ways in the sense of trying to sit down and understand the practical operations of how that would be applied. And when we had within NEDLAC, when we had met, I think it was in 2015, where this had been presented, we had said, okay, in principle, and the report acknowledges that we agreed to electronic at the introduction and use of technology, but when the regulations are to be drafted, we wanted to be part of that process so we can have a better understanding of the motivation, the intent, and make sure that there aren't any unintended consequences to wanting to improve the process, but at the same hand ensuring that we don't have the right balance in approach and understanding what is often the unintended consequences of electronic service. So the boost of you at this stage would be, unless we can engage and understand in a more detailed manner to satisfy the concerns, we would prefer at this stage to keep to the registered and in service. The sheriff, and I take note of the presentation, I would have to defer that the question was more about understanding why the sheriff was taken out of the process. That isn't clear to us in terms of what the original intention of... Yeah, so in our notes what we've said here is that it's unclear why it has been deleted, and we would like to just engage as it was part of the original R2 drafting. It was taken out and it was unclear as to why it was taken out. So whether it was to be included or excluded is not for us to say, it's just to understand why it was taken out. That we're not aware of. The representation on 40 days and on what authority in terms of the Constitution, I am afraid that I am not sufficiently qualified to address that particular technical in terms of case that would have motivated my understanding. And if you don't mind, if I can refer back to you on your question, which was the authority regarding the 40 days afterwards and why, as we've indicated, that there's a constitutional concern. The slides, apologies as not to repeat, but obviously we were trying to organize diaries and get the presentation to a sufficient level that was agreeable and ready for presentation, and unfortunately took up to quite recently to be able to finalize. And apologies that perhaps the clarity on some of the slides wasn't as clear, but it will be circulated to the Learned House. I think we may have missed each other on regarding tires. My point and the observation that's been made with regard to the RTMC report is that the tires contribute between smooth and tire bursts 80% towards crashes. So it's not to say that it's not included. What we're saying is R2 is one element, but and it's included obviously as a violation. What we're saying is, where within the plan is there a clear, cogent focus around how do we tackle, if tires have been identified as a key element contributing to fatalities, what is the action plan to drive that focus? It obviously would rely on visible policing. It relies on vehicle inspections. The mechanics, I'm obviously not able to offer suggestions. I appreciate it comes with resources. But if tires are a problem, camera taking traffic infringement in terms of by cameras doesn't help us address tires. So tires and whether roadworthiness is a key contributor, the current R2 system, which has got facility for it, but the action plan doesn't talk to how do we address tire bursts and smooth tires, which requires visible policing, and I appreciate that requires resources from the respective authorities. That's the challenge that we need to meet when we sit and engage each other to try and find a way forward, because perhaps business can offer some assistance in some manner, but that's fruit for a discussion. Volumes in terms of dealing with sheriffs, I appreciate that on the current basis of the volume of traffic infringement, to expect that sheriffs would be able to manage that process is clearly not a practical situation. But one would have to assume that where we were getting to in the escalation process, it's not for every infringement that a sheriff would have to attach. It is for those infringements that reach the level where a sheriff would have been required. And that as a percentage is obviously would be a much smaller percentage than the general volume of infringements. But I refer, we can address with that in terms of the general response on sheriffs. The crash data is, again, referring back to those key factors of tires and particularly pedestrians. So implementation, we are one in terms of the challenge that the implementation presents. And I think it's about how do we identify the right mechanisms and the implement and the tools, the action plans using the data. And I appreciate that there has been a focus and I'm encouraged that this house is particularly focusing on data. I think we're all concerned about it, and I think we need to work together because there may well be data that is available, that is being developed, that we're not privy to. So the statement around data is made in the absence of knowing anything else that may be happening. And again, I think that talks to the general question. The general point is to say that we need to engage more substantively as a working partnership, as opposed to on occasions like this where we're somewhat having to deal with stuff that is dated. The R2 report, as I said, that was just a point for information based on a response that we had received last year at NEDLAC in R2, and so we certainly would also like to be aware if that report is available in terms of an update, because I think that will inform us all on the discussion. My learned colleague had suggested availability of data, and I wasn't for a moment suggesting being Eurocentric of choosing the European model. What is interesting is that within that block, it was to illustrate that there is a population of 750 million. Within that, a community with very varying road traffic conditions, but it was the point of principle to say that they have managed a decrease in fatalities. That was being highlighted because in our previous discussions last year, there was a a view to suggest that the decision to push out the decade of action goals from 2020 to 2030 was based on a general acceptance that it was a challenge for most signatories to the UN decade of action to achieve that 50%. The point about that particular chart was to make reference to say that it is possible. Many countries with a much lower fatalities per 100,000 than what we have made strides in that decade. And unfortunately, we all have to take an account to say that we have not made any impact on that. With regards to the Africa data, my learned colleague is probably aware that there is little accurate data that would be available. And I certainly would welcome if there is perhaps he may be aware of any insights or data that may be available that could be shared with us as a stakeholder, so that there may also be learnings that can take place. We are aware, obviously, of the statistics in terms of fatalities per 100,000 of residents, and that does include African countries, but I'm not aware of any particular data that would help insight of learnings in those conditions. The R2 stakeholders and consultations, and I think it's the point is not to say whether we have had meetings, it's not to say whether we have been satisfactorily engaged. I think the view is to say that one meeting every couple of years doesn't constitute a substantive engagement in terms of a partnership towards trying to achieve a collective goal of reducing road fatalities. And I think it would be an error to try and describe whether consultation is met by one meeting a year or five meetings a year. I think our the management of our respective expectations around consultation is that being part of a process so that when legislation has been presented, we as stakeholders, as one of many, may feel that we have had an ample opportunity to present and give input in a meaningful manner. Unfortunately, our view has been that our submissions have not been taken into account, and then when we see legislation, it ignores it, and that is the prerogative, obviously, of the legislature, but I think there is a space where it helps to have an engagement to say, if these were your concerns that were raised, as a stakeholder, we do not agree for this and this. And we had that type of an engagement more recently on the National Road Safety Strategy with our colleagues from government, where the comments that had been submitted had been addressed and documented and responded in their subsequent responses in the report. So it's this meaningful, substantive engagement, I think that's important, and how it manifests itself, I think, is the opportunity that we are positioned with now to identify how practically it can work, because it certainly can, there is no sense that it is an adversarial role. It certainly isn't one where we can take positions on. We must be in unison and one to understand how we can collectively, because it's only collectively that we can truly make an impact. Apologies, and I didn't quite, but maybe the gentleman has left, but in terms of radical transformation, I understand he was talking about the road traffic infringement and national traffic, but in terms of how that translates into radical transformation, I'm not clear about, so perhaps we can revisit when he comes back so he can explain the linkage. I'm not fully aware of that. The one question that the gentleman had raised was Boos's view with regards to maintaining that there are certain operators or companies who benefit from the maintenance of the current system in that it leads to profit. And is there a view, if I understand the question, is to say would we support that, and are we saying that there is benefit to business given the current process? The response to that is to say that obviously there are, in any administrative process, there are people that operate. I don't know the extent of the profit or that the references to profit may be, but it certainly, we would not hold the view that you can have continue to incur road fatalities if it is and not tackle it for the preserve of profit. I don't think there would be anyone that would suggest that companies can make profits and not want to change and be part of a process to improve road safety for purely profit means. I think business adapts when conditions change. I mean, the irony of the process to think about it from a counter view would be to say that if everybody abided by the speed limit, then in some provinces and certainly some cities, of the revenue that is collected, what then would happen to those cities who would receive that revenue? If there was an improvement on road safety where there were no accidents, the panel shop industry would have less business. There is a double-edged sword in terms of that often we don't think about, where you have improvement, that there would be consequences to that downstream. But that is the right thing to do, is to ensure that you can save the economy and protect people on the roads. The consequences of that improvement and the unintended consequences in terms of financially for those people that have been located in the value chain that have benefited, business has to adapt to the new situations. So I think the principle is profit certainly is not to the fore in terms of when it comes to road safety. The road safety is first. The matter of 40 days, if I understand, and I just refer to the notes in the presentation, the matter is to say that it would have to be withdrawn. It's not a question of 40 days per se, whether it should be more or less. What we're saying is that the process is that if it is issued, that the question was concerned about the reissuing of that same infringement, that it would have to then be cancelled, withdrawn, and then the process start. But I can defer again and get a more authoritative view on that, because that is obviously a more technical, and I think you would probably prefer a more technical detail, a response to that, and I will have made a note. Chair, you've asked about the effectiveness and are there particular examples where we feel that the administrative process has not been helpful? There are members within the business sector that would report that when they have had experiences of R2, and obviously this is applicable in Johannesburg and Tshwane, that when enforcement orders, for example, have been placed on a fleet operator, and it has been identified then thereafter that in fact that infringement has been presented and redirected, is the term, and that is that when a infringement notice has been served and addressed to a infringer, whoever it be, and often for fleet owners that is a proxy, that is the details of the actual driver of the vehicle is then redirected to the authority. But what we have evidenced and found is that the redirection is not completed. Therefore, when the R207, which is a technical document of after the infringement, and the R207 is completed and redirected, it is not taken off the contravention register from the proxy, and it remains in the name of the proxy and not transferred onto the renter. Now, I appreciate the challenge, and we've engaged with the respective authorities. The challenge here is what data should be included in the R207 to ensure that there is adequate opportunity for the authorities to redirect. That we would say that there generally has been sufficient information communicated, but certainly there is a concern that once that redirection has been presented, it does not get processed, and as a consequence, the clock still continues. And ultimately, to the point, and given the challenges of the current service and communication process in terms of mail being issued, in terms of with the R2 process, it means that there have been instances where enforcement orders have been placed on fleet owners as a consequence of that infringement, thereby meaning that the operator is unable to operate in those vehicles stand for awaiting a vehicle license to be renewed, whatever the case may be. So there's ample opportunity to demonstrate the administrative concerns that business has with a particular process. In terms of your second last point, the driver behavior, and do we have any particular suggestions at this point in time regarding the regulations and suggestions that we could make in terms of regulations? Honorable Chair, I would think that it's one thing to have legislation, it's another thing to have boots on the ground and the awareness and the focus. I don't believe, and some of the commentators, if I read, I don't think it's for want of the legislative framework that we want. I think it's the enforcement and the boots on the ground is perhaps where the opportunity exists. I don't think we can certainly respond back with your particular point if there are some suggestions from a regulations point of view, but I think our concern would certainly be is that visible enforcement, visible policing, the visibility, education, training, it's not about sitting and taking, it's not about R2 and changing driver behavior, is not about the volume of camera traffic infringements that are generated by a city. It's about people being able to see enforcement, engage with the authorities, and understand the consequences of the infringement at that point in time. Your last point with regards to revenue generation, I refer back to the comment of saying that, well, if everybody drove well, we wouldn't be having these discussions and the revenue generation would be not a consideration. So I think we've got to work on the principles that our successful outcome is to change behavior and not focus on whether revenue generation is the outcome to be achieved. But what we are signaling is that the emphasis and the drive within the current process would lead one to feel that there is a over reliance and focus on how can we generate the revenue. And certainly the view would be, is similar to the previous comment, is that it's about the visible policing and the general citizenry being aware that there will be consequences for their actions, that they will be stopped, that they will be having to confront an enforcement officer where there is a traffic infringement. So I don't think that it's a question of revenue generation, but we collectively need to put various tools and mechanisms in place for deterrence to ensure that the right behavior is driven. I hope I've adequately responded to some of those questions, but I've made a note of two points to respond back on, being the 40 days and the authority, and also with regards to the role of the sheriff. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mark. Mr. Tsiletsane, advocate, would you want to speak?
No, Chair.
Okay. Mr. Tsiletsa. Hi, Dumoya Zamaya. Are the second bunch? It's Amaya. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to find out from Busa. And by the way, I was involved in the neglect process. And some of the things that were suggested there, they were actually taken into consideration. For instance, there were issues that were raised regarding demerit points on issues that may not cause the accident. And we removed those things. We had to do a thorough exercise going into Schedule 3 and remove some of the things. So whatever business gives us, it's not discarded in totality. And it doesn't also necessarily mean that business will be the legislators or will set policy. We also have some considerations, and some of the things are imported, some of the things are out. Now, Chairperson, the other issue is, since 2003, I've been involved in this process, and I've been talking to Savrala about the nomination issue. and still at that stage they even rejected totally this process of nomination. And we insisted that it shall happen because they are the ones who are hiring out vehicles. We don't know who they hired vehicles to. And there is now a command that business adapts. Now, I'm still wondering whether does it adapt sufficiently when these things from 2001, 2002, we discussed these things, and even at this stage, Chairperson, there's still issues about the nominations that business actually is not prepared to deal with. There are issues that there'll be enormous administration, they can't keep copies of this, and all sorts of things are coming out. And as far as I know, these things, when you hire a vehicle, they make a copy of that document that you give them. What happens to it? Because these things can be saved in computers, they can be saved elsewhere, that when you come in, they just punch and then it comes up, and they know that you are there. If we need it, they just send it to us. So I'm not sure what is the issue here. Whether can business adapt as it has been claimed, that it can adapt and actually support the processes that would support road safety issues. The other issue, Chairperson, that it's always used against the authorities and the RTIA is that documents are not being processed. Nominations are not being processed. But if you listen to the presentations that were done, you hear that certain documents, they don't want to supply those documents. They don't want to ask for them. They don't want to keep those documents. But they want to do a process that requires those documents that they say they don't have time to have. As a result, they give documents that are not properly completed, and if that happened, nothing will happen. It will stay as it is. So we must understand this, that it is not that we are not doing our work. The problem is, if you find something that is not complete, you can't do it. And more often than not, we find in other instances where things were done properly, but the issuing authority in Johannesburg or Tshwane, they did not do things correctly. When that is brought to our attention, then we assist. So it must be put in context that these things, Chairperson, they are not a one-way street. We need to sit and agree on certain things, but if business doesn't want to put something on the table, government cannot always be the one that puts something on the table. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mark?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my learned colleague is quite correct, and I have had the pleasure of meeting him in a number of forums at NEDLAC to discuss the issue. What I would say is obviously in terms of Savrala, and Savrala will obviously give a presentation after this. I'm speaking as BUSA, but Savrala are a member of BUSA. So perhaps I can just indicate this, that I think the last point that the Honourable Gentleman has indicated as the important thing is that we need to sit down and find an appropriate process moving forward, because and as he's quite correctly pointed out, the issue is not you've got national agencies and you've got cities. So there is a domino effect in terms of process, that if a city doesn't perform its role in the process and doesn't process a document, it leaves the national agency, when the matter escalates, in a slightly invidious situation. And I have been personally involved in one or two matters where we have identified where there has been an issue and then subsequently contacted the authority and found relief in that. But it signals that the process does not work all the time because you've got different key role players in it. I think we can, the opportunity for today is not to say what should or shouldn't be done. The opportunity really today is to say that there have been ongoing engagements. We have not found or way in terms of finding a proper outcome. If you take the R207 form, which is the literal document, if you were to complete it in full, you should be writing in your facsimile number. Now, I don't think people complete and we don't capture the fax numbers going forward. There is a need, what I'm aware that the industry that the gentleman has identified as being Savrala, that their members have always said that if a matter goes to court, that the docket shall be suitably and adequately completed and work with the authorities to ensure that their case is supported. But I think it talks to an issue where I know that there have been ongoing discussions with the industry and the authorities, and I think we need to try and engage more substantively, perhaps at the right level, to make sure we try and find our way, because we need to find our way. It doesn't suit both parties that we don't find a solution.
Thank you very much, Mark. I think it's work in progress. For us, we would take it like that, and we once more would say thank you for honoring our invite. We believe that from time to time. The committee secretary was listening together with the state law advisor and the legal unit from the parliament that beyond this, you would really appreciate to have something that is a pointer to say, you have raised this point and this is how we have been able to, because sometimes when it gets put in the law, it doesn't get put the way you have really structured it, but it is somewhere there as a point that you have raised for sure. Everybody who has made a submission, there will be responses to them to say on this point, this we will not necessarily agree with you. On this point, we believe that this is how we have factored it into the law, and that's how people really would be able to say that they have really publicly participated, and it's like you're putting it value for money in you coming here. But we have also noted the fact that you believe that conferencing would have been something very nice. But it's also nice to see you in person, maybe, not on television as conferencing is like that. You know, I always like to say to my children that when I say they want to go to the movies, I want to go to the bioscopes, and they are surprised what is a bioscope. You know, those type of things. So it's good. It's modern, like you're putting it. Teleconferencing would have been nice, but it's also good that you get to know this person physically. We're going to request Savrala to make their presentation if they are ready.
because there's two blacks here. It's a black one. So it means I can take it from here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think some of us were starting to sleep. Some of us were already sleeping. Now we will start with our session and request Savrala to make a presentation. Ready? Right on, brother.
Chairperson and honorable members, it's a pleasure and we're very honored to be here presenting to you today. As indicated by some of the members, that some of the preamble, because you've already got the documentations, you've perused them, and for purposes of just presenting the facts that need to be presented, we're going to skip some of the preamble. You've got the documentation at hand. If there's anything that you want to actually discuss from that, please feel free to as we go along. Savral is represented today by myself, I'm the president, Winston Guria, and my colleague, Sandile Netsuwani, who's the general manager. There's various initiatives over the years that Savrala have been involved with in a participative measure to find certain common ground and to focus specifically on some of the R2 initiatives. They listed in the preamble. There's obviously discussions with NEDLAC via Business Unity South Africa, and you know, we hope and our understanding today is that we're here to engage so that going forward we can find a better understanding together as a unified between business and government to find that which is an amicable resolution for both parties to actually find in its context. Just very, very briefly, I'll go through the introduction and some of the points. South African Vehicle Renting and Leasing Association was established to ensure that members maintain higher standards. The industry is self-regulated, and Savrala basically represents members and its stakeholders. Just some stats, and you know, just to put things into perspective, the annual gross revenue for the period January 2016 to December 2016, as a gross revenue figure, exceeded $5 billion. The average fleet which Savrala members utilize is in the region of 65,000 at any given time, with a utilization of 71.2%. The annual number of rental transactions, and these are the volumes that we alluded to in various presentations, is 2.7 million per annum. Some of the key concerns is increasing cost of vehicle prices, the poor driver renter behavior, the impact of the new tourism, BBBEE scorecard, and traffic fine infringement and redirection. You have the slides. These are the members and associate members. Okay, so to get to some of the points of discussion, I think some of the Savrala comments. Page 2, the clause 1, verse 1. A clear certified copy of the applicable certificate or document referred to in paragraphs A to E. We're saying it's not practical or feasible as a requirement for car rental fleet owners. Our car rental members have always maintained that should a case be presented before the courts, all efforts will be made to ensure that the necessary infringer, the rented details, will be presented to the prosecutor for their docket. The industry processed almost 3 million rental transactions last year. For members to obtain, retain, and commission such volumes, in the event that some of these renters incur traffic violations, which may lead to court proceedings, only creates burdensome administration and creates a potential risk of data thefts or impersonation without assisting the actual outcome of the process. Page 2, clause 1, 3, Electronic service means service by means of an electronic communication as defined in the Electronic Communications Act 2005, Act No. 36 of 2005. Whilst we welcome opportunities to use technology, in the context of auto and service, we are very concerned about how this will be applied with regard to the nature of the infringement in the car rental environment. As mentioned above, our members have serious and material issues with regard to the redirection of traffic fines. Given the auto administrative challenges already experienced, aside from the precarious and general nature of how electronic service could be applied in our industry, we believe that justice is currently best served by the registered mail or personal service. This does not deter us from engaging with authority to understand the full implication via a consultative method to understand how we can best utilize technology from both sectors. Page 3, Clause 4E, habitual infringer means an infringer, operator, or juristic person who, in terms of Section 25, incurs demerit points, resulting in a disqualification more than 2 times. As illustrated previously, in the context of infringement notices not being redirected timely, the application of the term habitual infringer will result in the car rental proxies being identified as such, even though the offender was the renter, resulting in the proxy being disqualified as a legal driver. In addition, we suspect that this provision will not find support as it prejudices the proxy and others in terms of Section 34 and 35 of the Constitution. Page 5, Clause 2F, H, administrating prescribed rehabilitation programs for habitual infringers. As identified earlier, all car rental proxies will be identified as habitual infringers. While the ambition is noted, this type of intervention needs much greater engagement and clarity. For example, how the whole process will be managed, funded, oversight, design, quality, and rehabilitation programs, etc. And we as Sevrale and our members will be in a position to engage with government and authority and other stakeholders in finding that solution. Page 6, New Clause 1, repeal of Section 12 of Act 46 of 1998. We find that this is a surprising move in the absence of any motivation, rationale, or analysis raises various concerns. Similar to other sections, this proposal needs a broader level of interrogation with a broad base of transport stakeholders and consultation. Page 7, New Clause 1, C5. The owner or operator of a motor vehicle who permits any person to drive such vehicle or otherwise to exercise any control over such vehicle without having ascertained the full names, acceptable identification and residential and postal and where applicable business and email address of the infringer, such person is guilty of an offense and liable upon conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 1 year, or to both a fine and such imprisonment for the prescribed penalty and fees. The above places an impractical administrative burden on car rental operators who often do not have the ability to capture all customer details, particularly email addresses, during the rental checkout process as customers increasingly require speed of service methods. Our industry has often but unsuccessfully tried to engage with authorities on the nature of rental data to be collected to serve the administration of traffic infringements. Even if it was collected, there is no ability to validate that the personal data submitted by a renter is correct. We need to work constructively together in unison to resolve this matter, which is even more problematic when we consider international visitors who rent our vehicles and commit an infringement. Page 12, New Clause 9, A, B, C, D. Similar to earlier comments, given the nature of the car rental transaction, these provisions prejudice the proxy, will be penalized for offenses merely by virtue of being a proxy. You can read at your leisure some of the practical examples that we put into place. We understand and know that the CIMA, has been discontinued, but, just in terms of some of the traffic fine redirection, these are the challenges that we face. The manual processes via the postal services, fines not delivered correctly via the Act, fines not received at the post office, fines going into courtesy and infringement without notice received results in vehicle licenses not being issued. I think the new draft, the concerns in terms of the new draft legislations make mention of fines being emailed, consider or take into account the administrative cost to fleet members. Has the pricing been available to date? On redirection, relook at the framework. Currently, you have 32 days from date of first infringement received. Make available a web-based system like the one that Cape Town currently uses. Explore measuring possible impact of any amendments and then to re-engage the broader stakeholders. These amendments create many more challenges for fleet operators without any indication from the legislator of how the changes will lead to better road behavior and improve road safety. In fact, it's surprising that the road safety is not mentioned once in the proposed amendments. We view the motivation for the establishment of an appeals tribunal as challenging and a decision that needs much more stakeholder engagement. It would appear that the consequence of such a development would be to remove an infringer's opportunity to seek legal recourse, whilst we suspect will be challenged legally. Given that the current ARTA process is already administrative challenge, it is disappointing that a further layer would be viewed as being progressive. The above comments by no means preclude many other concerns with the proposed amendments. However, we believe that they give a clear signal that a much broader, deeper, and sincere engagement is required between the Department of Transport, its agencies, and its stakeholders to ensure that the legislative focus is firmly placed on road safety, and not on more efficient methods to generate volumes of infringement notices to raise revenue. We appreciate this consultative forum that we are present at, and we thank you for the opportunity to comment and look forward to engaging with you in order to move South Africa forward from a road safety priority. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, are there questions for clarity or comments? Honorable Teko.
Thanks, Acting Chair. Chairperson, let me thank the presenters for their appearance and presentation to the committee. I was looking at page 15 where their concern is around electronic services, which I think it may not be their main concern because it is not the only method of communication that is proposed. There's also the method that was there previously, the registered mail. It has not been taken out. It's also the other mean to communicate with the infringer. And also on page 24, where they are proposing re-engagement to broader transport stakeholders, I was to ask if there are any that we have left, any stakeholders that they can mention, the ones that they think we have overlooked. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Any other member wants to make comments? Honorable Nsingh.
Thank you, Chair. Acting Chair, rather. Thank you for the presentation. I don't have any particular questions. I think other than to say a lot of what you also alluded to were part of the elements that we have investigated and scrutinized, just to thank you for your contribution.
Honorable Sibanda.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I wanted to comment 1, 2, 3. See, I was checking, first of all, thank you for your presentation, but I was checking some of your concerns. Like, I can't mention pages because my paper, in your introduction, I think it's page 6, increasing cost of new vehicles and the poor driver rental behavior, and the impact of the new tourism fee, the scorecard, traffic fine, infringement. See, to me, I need some clarity from you. Where is the problem? What are you there? Then number two, in your comment, where you, it seems also your concern is about the information given by the driver who is going to rent the car, whatever. You see, to me, what is worrying me from your own report, it means that it's to hire a car from you is very vulnerable to people to take it forever because you are unable to get the proper information. For an example, in nowadays, if a person wants to buy a telephone, a cell phone, they need you to go and recar it. That means meet your particulars and everything. So where is the problem? And where does it link it to this proposal of Arto? Because to me, I believe that if they go to rent a car, you must have, they need a lot of things which I normally use to hire a car sometimes. And also, if you want to open an account in a bank, they need your bank details, they need all your particulars. So where does it link you? Because it seems to you, you are making it as an example that is creating problems to infringements, because even yourself, you are unable to get that proper information. That is my understanding. So where does it link? Where is the problem? Because if that's the case, it means that a lot of people can be rich because they can hire a car without any proper information forever. Gone. You are the ones who are supposed to assist in that regard to get proper information. And then, again, lastly, you said on page 20 you are in industries often, but unsuccessfully tried to engage with the authorities to collect the proper data. I can't understand which authority you are talking about, because here our aim, we talk about the ARDO. So where does it link? Where is the problem exactly? I'll put it there, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Acting Chairperson.
Thank you. Mr. Deflatos, do you want to make a point or question? You are covered. Let me just find out. What is the difference between CANCOM and Savrala? There was a team here which came and represented the rental car sector yesterday, and Savrala is here. Is there a line in between? And also, for making a follow-up to the question raised by Honorable Sbanda on page 19, where it says that the above places an impractical administrative burden on car rental operators who often do not have the ability to capture customer details, particularly email addresses, due to rental checkout processes as customers increasingly require speed of service methods. So you blame the department for not capturing information correctly. So also your business has got high risk of people who can give you wrong information and disappear into thin air. It goes on page 20, where it talks about to validate the personal data submitted by a renter, whether it's correct or not. And the problem gets mounted when we talk about international visitors who rent our vehicles and commit an infringement. So is it the problem of the department, what you are raising here, or the problem is with your systems that do not capture the correct information at the end of the day? Maybe before you come in, maybe let me allow the department to respond to some of the issues they Savrala has raised, and then you will come in and respond. say something.
Thank you, Chair. On page 16 and 17, with Savral, I can see that they do have an idea how they can process things through our systems, as they talk about proxies. But I see they made it as a concern of saying the proxy being disqualified as a legal driver. To me, it posed a question of saying, we've been discussing with them for years, and I believe a proxy, according to regulation of National Road Traffic Act 336, tells exactly if their proxy is registered with the issuing authorities to make sure that everything that comes to a proxy, being rental a company, they will be able to get ID that, they, as we said, they can transfer to the person that they know. And at the same time, that's why maybe when the proxy nominate, if the proxy didn't put the ID of the person as they do the rental, that's where the problem it might be. Now, my question to them, their concern meaning, do they submit correct information to the issuing authority in order to process, or is it a matter of saying the proxy just put everything then, say, this thing will just emanate with half information? As you said, Mr. Toletan just alluded recently that if information is not fully complete or information is not delivered correctly to us, there's nothing is going to be processed. I would like them just to clarify on us the issue of proxy, the problem, because the main thing it seems on the, they're worried that their proxy will be disqualified as a legal driver, whereas we know that a proxy cannot drive plus or minus 40 vehicles or 50 vehicles that they are renting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Tuletano and Mr. Masombo.
Chair, just as an addition to this specific concern that we raised, we find that the so-called proxies that represent the industry, they come to us in different phases. One, they'll come as a proxy, properly registered within the processes of National Road Traffic Act, which is no problem. And they'll come with a letter that says it's a power of attorney. They'll come with a letter that says he's been given authority to do X, Y, Z. So we are sitting in a situation where we must accept some of the things just to assist the interest, the industry, that in law they are not allowed. I can't be dealing with a person who's got a letter that says, Savrala says I can do this, but that person is not registered as a proxy. So we have those kind of problems because those people, when they have to fill forms, they'll fill proxy at the top of the form. And there's no ID number, there's nothing, and there's an address. And you can't, as RTIA, process that information because the regulations say, if you want to do a transaction X, there's a form that is prescribed that must be filled, completed fully. If you don't complete it fully, as Mr. Mkabela said, Chairperson, it's unfortunate that these things will stay there and not be there redirected. That's unfortunate. But where they do what they're supposed to be doing, most of them, they'll get through. If they don't, the authorities don't do something, issuing authorities, we will actually assist them by actually cancelling that specific infringement. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Regarding the notion that this particular bill should be reverted to NEDLAC, we don't agree to that because we've got the NEDLAC report that authorized the minister or the department to proceed with this bill to other committees like this one. And in that report, business was represented by Gavin Kelly, Engwisheng Masake, D-Base, N. Buteles, and Sundiaz, and Gavin Kelly, and Mr. Kokoran. And from the government, it was myself, Suletan, and the like. So Labour was also represented by Mr. Plaki, Community was also represented by Mhlongo and Ndaba and Nkakazo. So that report was signed off by these parties that deliberated on this matter, and that's like that we need to proceed with this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Savrano, can you respond to the issues that were raised by members and the department?
Honourable members, thank you very much for your questions. I'll try to address them together with my colleague as best as we can. And should you require anything that I can't address directly, we'll obviously table that and forward an absolute submission. I think as an overall measure to express our desire, Savrala, to be consultative is an imperative. We, as Savrala, would not be here today if we did not want to engage, if we did not want to find a proper measure that finds a balance between all parties and stakeholders. In terms of your electronic services, your first question, if I may address them as we go in order, please guide me if there needs to be a different order. But in terms of the electronic services, on page 15, if I could just go to that very quickly. Yeah. I think our context here is that we as Savrala and representative of all its members, if you look at the technology that has been invested within our portals, I think it would give you an understanding of the change management that Savrala and its members have embarked upon to actually find an easier, quicker mechanism in trying to provide service delivery. Our members have invested huge sums of money in trying to find mechanisms to provide better service to our customers and to quicken the rental process. I think many of you, if not all of you, have rented vehicles at some stage or other. And when you do that, there is general frustration around the delays that may or may not occur at your rental counters. And the Savrala membership have invested huge amounts in technology and in electronic methodology. We're not distancing ourselves from any electronic means. All we're saying is that we need to fully understand the implications of how the electronic measures as proposed by the bill is going to come into effect, and we need to understand the dynamics of how that will affect us as Savrala. Your question in terms of broader stakeholders, 24... In terms of your question with regard to broader stakeholders, we believe that this process is consultative, and yet again to reiterate, that's part of the reason why we're here. We believe that all stakeholders within this environment should be engaged. I'm not privy to whether all stakeholders have been consulted or invited to these proceedings. I think just in that context of stakeholders, it was alluded to earlier as well that the lateness of the notification could have prevented some of the stakeholders not being present. We kind of found out about this meeting just by chance through some other membership. So in terms of your queries regarding the cost, I may just go through that and we'll address that. Car rental concerns. I think this was more as an introduction to the nature of where Savrala and its membership finds huge cost concerns within our environment. Increasing cost of new vehicle prices, that is a reality within our environment. Your manufacturer car prices increase between 4 to 12% on an annual basis. Our concern within our environment is poor driver renter behavior. And we're just tabling some of the other aspects that our car rental industry do go through. The impact of the new tourism BBBE scorecard is a huge concern for us. The traffic infringement redirection, obviously, R2 is another concern. This was just more as a preamble to give you an indication of what the industry is going through. We have concerns in terms of driver information and the supply of information. I think it's important to understand in this, there's been very a few questions regarding that, page 20 in terms of the infringement data, page 19 in terms of the validation. And if I could go to that very quickly, I'll give you an understanding of where we're coming through with that. Okay, if, I don't want to go through the entire clause, but page 7, clause 1, section C, you know, it basically talks about the owner operator of the motor vehicle who permits any person to drive any such vehicle or otherwise to exercise any control over such vehicle without having ascertained the full names, okay? And then there's a penalty to that. If you have to unpack that in its context, it basically states that we as car rental need to validate. Now, validation is an extremely difficult context. Yes, we will use our best endeavors to validate, by all means, because the process needs to ensure that the information passed on to the authorities is the best we can. If we take a step back, and I alluded to the fact that some of you, if not all of you, have rented vehicles. If you went to any one of our counters, members' counters, and they asked you for your residential proof of residence, I'm wondering how many of you would actually take the time to give that to any one of our car rental counters. And these, I'm talking about casual renters who would walk up to our counters. Your general corporate accounts, we'd have all of those facilitated. So I'm saying, when we utilizing the context of saying that we need to ascertain the full detail and validate that, that becomes very, very precarious and difficult for us to actually do. So we're saying best endeavors, yes, we can do them. That's the first part of the proxy question. The second part of the proxy question relates to why do we consider the proxy, and I think, so we refer to page 16 and page 17. To refer to page, in terms of our presentation, page 16 and 17, we chatted about the habitual infringer, and we said that the habitual infringer may not be the person that the aspect of law would be applied to, and it would be the proxy. Now, what we're questioning here, firstly, I think, is to understand, is the intention to impose a penalty on the infringer, or just any person we can hold responsible? And I think we need to unpack that very, very carefully. When we're applying the infringement laws, is it against the person that's an habitual infringer? Now, this is a person that perpetuates infringements against road traffic ordinances. Or are we just trying to get somebody who's a proxy to bear the penalty and the brunt of it? And if we are we not leading back to the question that we asked earlier? Is this a revenue generation process, or are we concerned about true road safety and about driver behavior? In terms of the question with regard to NEDLAC, if I haven't misunderstood the question, sir, we're talking about all stakeholders, and we're not necessarily talking about NEDLAC in isolation. We appreciate this consultative measure, and we believe that all stakeholders and whatever process that government and authority puts into place, we as SIDRALA will be part of that. I think I've answered most, if not all, of the questions. Is everything said? Something you want to add to
I think, thank you, Chair. I just want to go back to the concerns, and I think Butilo raised some of those, you know, perhaps the wording that says concerns would be quite surprising. But what it basically means is that those are the key focus areas, you know, like, you know, we're focusing on as RALA, and we list these every year. And those are key, and these relate more specifically, I think the top two relate more specifically to our discussion. But certainly, like every other organization, you know, things like, you know, BEE, you know, our BEE initiatives, it's a serious focus area. So concern could be misleading. It's not really, these are not concerns, but the key strategic focus areas. The question of redirections, we have, you know, continuous interactions, for instance, with RTMC, and, you know, we've had recent meetings, and, you know, obviously a lot of those were also touched by the move, you know, from the old offices. But we've had, you know, interactions with RTMC, again, to, you know, address some of the concerns and that we have. Not only there, you know, I think someone referred to, you know, what do we mean by, you know, engaging. We, not only have we engaged with RTMC, we've also been engaging with the Department of the MMC of Transport, for instance, who himself has, you know, led us to engagements with, for instance, Ekurhuleni, where a process, at least, was found to alleviate some of the congestions that we've experienced when processing, for instance, our licensing, because, you know, we are, you know, bulk users. Which other one? I think that's about it, you know. Yeah.
I think in, thank you very much, Sadele. I think in, finally, you know, just as a final comment, I want to say that we appreciate being part of this process. We look forward to further engagements with government so that we can find an amicable resolve with any issues that we have between both parties so that we can make this a better process together. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I asked a question about CANCOM and yourself.
My apologies, sir. I failed to answer that question. CANCOM is a private company that handles fine redirection for some of the SEBRALA members. It is not a SEBRALA association. SEBRALA members have the prerogative to take on any supporting association that they may feel necessary to utilize in their ventures, whether it be legal or otherwise. Several of our members utilize CANCOM as a company to redirect fines and to also and is also utilized as a legal advisory to our several other members.
Okay. Is there a follow-up? Mr. President, I don't think you doubt what the exercise that we are engaged upon. I heard you saying whether other stakeholders have been communicated to in regard to this process. We have got a number of stakeholders who have made inputs to this amendment, and others are still coming. So I suspect you were not raising the legitimacy of this exercise. You were concerned with something else, but not that what we are doing, we have been communicated with. We have gone all out to those who did not even respond through advert to write to them as Parliament. Like the NTA who are here, we wrote to them SANTACO and many, many other organizations. So there should be no doubt about the legitimacy of this exercise. I hope that matter should be laid to rest.
Through you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, I think it's something that was also noted by BUSA, the fact that we are members of BUSA. We only got to know, incidentally, the transport subcommittee of BUSA, which I sit in as well, met about a week ago, and these amendments. We only got to know, not as Sovrala, for instance, and a lot of our members at BUSA didn't know. It was only brought to our attention by a member who, I think, perchance, over the weekend, read a small article or something. So I think it's in that sense that we're saying perhaps, we appreciate that you may have reached out to a whole lot of other stakeholders, but certainly, BUSA represents a wide, broad community of business. And if they themselves didn't get the letter you're referring to, that's why we felt perhaps, we should just add the fact that you should make sure that at least there's broader consultation.
Okay, no, thank you. Back to you, Chairperson. We seem to be done with Sovrala.
Thank you very much. Honorable Humsinga.
Chair, I'm a bit hesitant to raise this point, but I think we should also not leave our guests with a misconception. Letters were sent out in an additional effort to get as wide as possible participation. The misconception I'm alluding to is not to create the impression that that is standard procedure. As a stakeholder entity, which you represent as an organization, as an association of representativity of some kind, normally these public participation invitations are gazetted. And it's not normal to send out letters of invitation. So what I'm saying is that as an association, you should plug into the advertised gazettes. And it seems like you missed one or two of these advertised gazettes. All I'm saying is that is where one should plug into in order to be a stakeholder in the process. I'm not saying that it's a ideal process. All I'm saying is as an association representing members, that's where you need to plug in because it's advertised officially in the Gazette and that is often the only opportunity and notice of engagement. What this committee has done in addition, this is the second round of public participation, that is over and above, which we want to make sure of that it would be a very represented input, and that's why we've sent out additional letters of invitation, etc., etc. But it's not normal procedure, and but we do appreciate all and every engagement. Even at this late stage, I'm sure the committee would be, in great acceptance and appreciation of additional input, because we must make sure that R2 specifically works and that it's a process which is inclusive rather than to exclude anything, which also reveals the attitude of this committee. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Honorable Humsinga. Maybe like he has indicated, this is the second round that we're doing, which is not very, it's kind of an unusual situation. But in this round, we have tried to make it kind of an extra effort to make sure that those who are in the industry, yourselves, BUSA, already by the 10th of March, they had already made submissions, probably on behalf of the whole institution. And it is good that I would say now we've got information of who in the industry the stakeholders are. You are in our databases such that as we will be dealing with the institution, as we'll be dealing with other things going forward, you will always be information coming to you. Let me indicate that as Santaco will be coming, we have dealt with the taxi industry, your Ubers, your charter taxis, your meter taxis. We have really dealt with even the smallest of the institutions coming from Daung in the Northern Cape, coming to make a presentation, just how wide the scope has been. And we're saying, there's an honorable member who likes to say, we must make sure that we don't behave like other committees, where in the ultimate end, the Constitutional Court said you have not properly consulted. We have over close to 50 submissions that has already been made. We have dealt with a lot of institutions, and we have said in this whole scenario, we will not take less than 50% of the people that have made submissions to us. And I think we have been able to live up to our expectation in this regard. So we are happy that we've got you now. We will, on a regular basis as Parliament, whenever there's other things, make sure that now that you are in our database, we interact and engage with yourself. On behalf of the committee, thank you very much for the presentation that you have made. We are cleverer and richer in terms of comprehension of the issues in ARDO better than before you came here. I think I would say that on behalf of the committee, you are recused. If you want to continue staying, it's also okay because we still have to continue with the business of the day.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I just want to say thank you, Honourable Member, for clarifying that issue around the stakeholders. Appreciate that. We thank you for the interventions that you've had in trying to engage with the various stakeholders, and we appreciate it for that. And Sirala, we look forward to further engagements. Thank you for your time today.
Honourable Members, Tate Tsiletsana, are you ready? Or has your brain gone to sleep? You can't be our weakest link this time. We must finish everything here today.
Chairperson, I think from what we had, we had already dealt with issues, and I think even the Savrana issues we touched on them yesterday. I saw from the bill issues, there was nothing that was new that they've added, and the only part that we believe we must deal with is the issues from NTA, that with my colleagues we said we need to go and update so that first thing in the morning we can deal with those issues. I think it's one submission that we haven't dealt with. Oh, no, Chairperson, there's a submission from Johannesburg. That I must deal with. My apologies. I forgot the Johannesburg submission.
Honorable members, can I get your indulgence for tomorrow? The mic.
Thank you, Chair. Can we meet on Tuesday? Tomorrow, I'm not here. And it looks, Bo is not here. So the committee will be depleted. You will be two.
Honorable De Freitas, there's a proposal on the table.
Yes,
that
Chair, if there's not going to be a quorum, then may I suggest that we get during, you know, by kind of Monday at the latest, get a consolidation of everything we've gone through, and so that we can be ready on Tuesday to then consider all that. We won't have a choice if we don't have a quorum tomorrow, so let's then get all the information, get it mailed to us, and then on Monday. Ideally, we get it posted over the weekend, then, or even earlier, so that we can then prepare ourselves for Tuesday. Thank you.
In essence, you are seconding what the honourable member was saying, that we not hold the committee tomorrow. It will also give Artia the opportunity of dealing with the issues that have come to us, so that Tuesday when we arrive here, we have already gone through what we they have dealt with. But I think also even the legal team will also have ample time to can deal with the matter, so that Tuesday, Wednesday, we're able to really deal with the matters, and when we do eventually go to our constituencies, they will remain refining the law, so that when we come back, we find a proper processes that have been dealt with. Can we, on that note, thank you, Busa, thank you, Sabrala, Ntate Soletsane and your team from Artia, Advocate Masumbuka and your team, Valerie and your team, everybody who's here. Thank you very much. You always are very good people to steer around, and I really appreciate, because I don't get much of a challenge. The day I get the challenge, it will be... Yeah? Pastor, oh, I'm sorry, Pastor Jeff is held up. But it saved us, eh? It saved us that the pastor is not here, because he can preach. Yeah, he really can preach. So we are happy that he was not here. That's why we're able to finish on time. But he's held up. Probably next week he'll be here. Yeah, so probably next week he will be here. On that note, honorable members, the meeting is adjourned. We're starting 9:30 on Tuesday.